Welcome to Gila Members Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico. It's time for a little local flavor with your host, Raul Turrieta. A tasty mix of red, green, or Christmas conversation. A stimulant to the appetite that exceeds the minimum daily adult requirement for music, weather events, updates, and lowdowns in southwest New Mexico. So take your vitamins, tuck in your napkin, and we'll provide the rest.
Programming on GMCR is made possible by its members and supporters, including Western New Mexico University Cultural Affairs, presenting Albuquerque Jazz Orchestra featuring Hillary Smith, an 18-member big band jazz orchestra. Experience them live at Light Hall on Thursday, February 9th at 7 p.m. Information and tickets at wnmu.edu/culture.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
Now, baby, listen, baby, don't you treat me this away, girl, I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you do, cause it's understood. You ain't got no money, you just.
Well, I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Good morning.
Good morning. This is KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico. What a beautiful, beautiful day we have here in Santa Fe. Guess what? I'm looking out the window and I can see the roundhouse. Guess what? It's round. You go around in circles and circles and circles. And another thing is it's Groundhog Day, so it matches the roundhouse. What do you think about that, George? Good morning. How you guys doing?
I think I'm in one of the circles of Dante's hell here.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
I'd like to say this is February 2nd, and the local flavor with the Crazy Cat, Robert Turrieta, and George and Ken. Well, I can't wait to get back home tonight there, you guys.
We can't wait for you to get back home either. Stay there.
You can wait or you can wait. You tell me, Ken.
I don't know. You know, one thing we can do here is we can always turn you off.
Well, you know, you're beginning to sound like my wife, right? So stop it, all right? Well, you know what? I got a good friend of mine. He's actually a Senate. He's a bill, Senate reader, and his name is Harry Montoya. We're going to talk a little bit about what goes on at the Roundhouse. And right now, you know, we're actually looking at the Santa Fe New Mexican newspaper, and it is quite interesting on what things are going on right now. But I just want to introduce him and let me know how the reception sounds, because I know we need more funding in the radio station, because it sounds like I'm talking from one of those toilet papers, you know, dispensers type thing. So, you know, we need to do something, you guys. So I'd just like to introduce Harry Montoya. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning, Raul. Buenos dias. Buenos to all your listeners there in Silver City. Glad to be with you. Thank you for inviting me again, Raul. I really appreciate it. I always have a great time whenever we get together on these interviews.
Well, you know what, Harry? I was sitting on the Senate floor. It was Grand County's day yesterday. And, I mean, the gallery was packed. And, you know, now I'm sitting with Romeo Cruz. He's actually the president of the Silver City Chamber. And, you know, and I mean, the gallery was packed. So I hear this voice. And I said, man, who's this guy with this radio voice? Man, I thought, I mean, he was just amazing. And so I looked down and I said, oh my gosh, it's Harry. How long have we known each other, Harry?
Oh gosh, we're going out, what, 25 years now? That's been a long time. I mean, since started our days, you know, with the New Mexico Association of Counties, which is now the New Mexico Counties or something like that. But it's been, yeah, close to giving them 25 years already. It's amazing.
That's amazing because we are here at the New Mexico Counties, and we're going to have Joy Esparson, executive director, to be on the show this next the next hour at 9 o'clock. But you know, it's quite interesting that I've been coming up here for the last pretty much 40 years, and you've been, you know, I'll admit you about 25 years. You were actually commissioner there in Santa Fe. Don't say again, Santa Fe. All right. So don't you say the mother words. All right. But it seems like things are moving. Things are shaking. A lot of money here in Santa Fe.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got 3.6 billion additional monies available just this past legislative session. And you know, my thought on that rule is that, you know, when you have that amount of money, it's going to be a one-time thing. Look at infrastructure. You know, I spent the last year on the roads all over New Mexico. And I'll tell you what, they can put all of that money into all of the roads throughout New Mexico just to fix up the infrastructure. Roads, bridges, you know, and then you hear about, you know, water and wastewater, you know, systems within the small communities throughout New Mexico. Those are the things that are one-time expenses, well, very worthwhile, in my opinion, common sense approach to utilizing some of these funds. So I'm hoping that a lot of that money does go to infrastructure, one-time funding, and then you don't have to worry about it. You know, you've got all the communities throughout New Mexico that are going to be improved as a result of these investments in the community. So I'm hoping that that happens. You know, and, I saw a friend yesterday, we were talking about some different things, you were anyway, and he said, you know, he was in the roundhouse and he comes up to me, hey, Harry, this is a place where common sense comes to die.
What do you think about that, George? I think that's hilarious. But you know what, Harry, you know, we've been at this game for a long time. I've never chased anything under capital outlay at all. I've always worked on tax bills and, you know, for the assessor's affiliate. And there's a lot of changes going on right now. And it was an honor to be part of Grand County Day yesterday and, you know, how he handled the Senate. And it was quite interesting that I mean, it was a packed house yesterday.
Yeah.
So can you just give a little breakdown on what the process is from the minute the bill lands there at the roundhouse and where it goes to? Because, like I said, man, listen to that guy with that radio voice. I said, man, who is that? That's Harry Montoya. And it's amazing that, you know, when we hung out at afterwards, everybody was kind of high-fiving you and saying, man, you did a great job. So I don't know if I could do that. I could really read, and here I am, you know, trying to, you know, read bills left and right.
But you don't have to read. You have a mind that just gives everything to you, and you just put it out there, man. You don't need to read. You know, in terms of the job that I have as the Senate reader, you know, I was approached kind of as a last-minute type of deal, Raul, and the people that were in charge of hiring Senate clerk, chief clerk, Sherry DeHorn and Harry Macias, who also was there, asked me, you know, if I would be interested in coming in. This was, you know, 2 days before the session started. So came in, did a quick audition, and, you know, I've been doing a little bit of PA stuff for the Boatia schools, boys and girls basketball, did the state tournament a couple of times. So it helps in the sense that, you know, the butterflies. I still have butterflies, man. I mean,
do you still have butterflies?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, that opening day at the session was, it took me a while to catch my breath and finally get into the flow. And it helps, like you and I have known these, senators and representatives for a number of years, known Howie since his days as, he was with the county.
He was a county clerk. Yeah.
County clerk. So I've known him since then. You know, a lot of the people that are there now I've known for years. So it helps to know them, to have that confidence that, you know, there's that comfort that we know each other. And it's not like I'm just, you know, having to say something in front of a strange crowd. So it's a friendly and a familiar crowd and familiar faces. So anyway, you know, the bills come in and they're usually drafted through Legislative Council Service. That's where all the bills get started. You know, you have to find a sponsor, legislative sponsor, in terms of who's going to carry that bill for you. Then once you find the sponsor, then they'll have you drafted the Legislative Council Service. It'll be vetted by the leadership, you know, in the House and the Senate, and, you know, typically the Speaker, and in the House, the President Pro Tem and the Majority Leader. And then it'll be introduced, and that's what I do. I introduce the bills, read the bills that are coming in. And then once they're introduced, then they're assigned to the different committees. So it'll go through the different committees on the Senate side for my purposes on the Senate side. And then it'll come to the floor. Once it gets through all the committees, comes to the floor for debate, it gets past the floor, then it goes to the House for either concurrence.
Well, who makes the decision about which committee it goes to?
It's the leadership again. You know, you've got the President Pro Tem, the Senate Majority Leader, and then they'll consult with the sponsor as well. So it's kind of, I guess, three, four different people that will determine, you know, what committees it gets assigned to, based on what the subject of the matter is in terms of the legislation being proposed. So those are the ones that will make the decision in terms of the committees. Typically, I'd say probably 90% of the bills go to Senate Judiciary and Senate Finance, because they always involve something in terms of, you know, now they're introducing crime laws and gun bill laws and that sort of stuff that need to align with not only the state constitution, but the United States Constitution as well. So they'll always go through Judiciary to pass that test. And then it always involves an allocation of money. So Senate Finance needs to look at it, say, you know, what impact is going to have on the budget? What long-term effects? Is it a recurring cost or is it a one-time cost? And that's why I say these one-time costs with all this money now, I mean, it just makes...
Well, when you explain, if it's a one-time cost, they have to spend every penny of it?
They don't have to spend every penny of it. They could put, you know, a percentage of it in reserve. But, you know, I mean, it was like at the county when we had one-time funds, we always put it in infrastructure. Infrastructure was always a good investment. And that's the way I see this now when we have this, you know, oil and gas revenue windfall. Let's put it toward projects that we need out there. And, man, I regret that I never went to go visit you all in Silver. And if I would have done that, I would probably be talking in a different situation right now.
You know, it's amazing because driving all the way up from Silver City on up here, and the roads are bad. I mean, you go to the interstate, you got these, you know, these vehicles that are just hitting these potholes left and right, and you know what? That's our means of getting around. And once again, transportation right now is, you know, with these semi trucks carrying all our, you know, our whatever food or supplies or whatever the case may be, and you know, that's a lot of money just to do it for pretty much other different things, you know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm serious, Raul. I did not go through a single road in New Mexico and in these communities where roads were just horrible. Just horrible. Potholes all over the place. It was like, you know, even going on the interstate, it's like, are there supposed to be speed humps on the interstate?
So, Harry, so now, okay, it's a long session. Okay, it's a money session. Well, it seems like a money session more than anything else. I mean, you're looking at about 1,000, maybe 1,500, 1,800 bills going through the Senate and the House.
Yeah, we have, we're close to 300 just now on the Senate side. You know, we're 2.5 weeks now into the session. So we have about another week and a half before, you know, the bills will stop being introduced. So at that rate, we're probably looking at about another 300-400, so yeah, close to 700 on the Senate side alone, and the House side usually always doubles that, you know, so they're probably looking at about 1,200 to 1,500. So yeah, that's a lot of bills and a lot of legislation to be proposed, you know. But, you know, we do have a 60-day session, which, you know, one of the bills that's being proposed, they're asking to, you know, should we make legislators paid legislators? We're one of, I think, three states in the country that does not pay our legislators, you know. And you know, I think personally that would be great, because then it provides
hey man, if they start paying legislators, I'm running for office there, Harry. I'm sorry, I'm gonna be the next representative, man. I'm telling you right now.
I think you should.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think so. Yeah, but I think it would be very positive that we actually would pay our legislature. And what's your opinion about that, George?
Well, I'm all in favor of that. You know, just like you said, Raul, if they start paying, you might consider running for office. That's true for a lot of people that can't, that cannot possibly enter the race simply because they can't afford it. I know that our senator, Saya Kriya-Hempel, it takes a huge hit. Not only is she away from her family for 60 days, but in addition to that, she can't work. She can't get paid. you know, it's a considerable sacrifice.
I'm gonna tell you that, George, yesterday Saya spoke about her children and, you know, what she goes through just to take care of them. And I looked at her and I said, my gosh, Saya, not only that, you have to take care of your kids and you got to be up here every... And then she did say a couple comments about the ropes. So it is what it is. But hey, you know, it's quite interesting that hopefully, you know, we got very powerful people up here that, you know, pretty much represents the South End. I look at Nathan Small. Now he's going to be chairman of the legislative finance. And then we got Howie Morales as our lieutenant governor. We got powerful Saya, you know, and then we got Luisa Terraza. So, you know, things are looking positive. And I think and I hope that and we're going to break this down probably at the bottom of the hour on where a lot of these will be allocated for Grand County. And the reason I brought Harry in is because, you know, you look at the bigger picture. You know, you got the smaller communities up north. You got the rural areas down in the south end. And hopefully that they can spread the wealth there. Harry?
Yeah, no, that's to me, again, I said it earlier. I'll say it again. It's just common sense that we do that type of investment in our communities at this point in time. I mean, this is probably, I mean, I don't remember having a windfall like this ever. You know, while I was on the Santa Fe County Commission, you've been in county government longer than I have. I don't know.
I've never seen anything this large, for expenditure like that. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. So I could probably confidently say this is a probably once in a lifetime type of deal where we're going to ever see this type of opportunity to invest in our communities and make sure that monies that are getting in there are being spent wisely. And, you know, again, I said infrastructure, you can't go wrong with infrastructure.
Well, then everybody's happy. I mean, no matter how you look at it, everybody's happy. And you're really, you know, distributing the wealth for everybody. And I think that's a very positive. And to me, I've always believed saving money for a rainy day and putting money to the reverse. And I think that's very, very important because, man, there's some days where the bottom drops out and there's some days where you're barely surviving. And then there's some days that you're just happy as heck, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that happened in 2008 when I was on the commission. The bottom kind of fell out of the economy at that time. And luckily we had, you know, some pretty healthy reserves within Santa Fe County. And I don't know if you remember, but the state didn't at that time. You know, they came in and they were spend happy from 2002 to about 2007. And then the bottom fell out. So then the money that we had at that time for capital outlay projects, the state went in and swept all that money, took all of our capital outlay that we had already been allocated, that we already had obligated for projects here in Santa Fe County, and boom, they were gone. You know, and that's the kind of thing that hurts and impacts communities. When we have those funds that are available, and then if we don't invest it wisely and put it into the reserves, you know, and that brings in another, you know, the voters just recently passed the early childhood education fund for about another $150 million, you know, and I was opposed to that. You know, I was telling people we don't need this money because, number one, it put the reserves in the land grant permanent fund over 5%. Any conscious investor will tell you that you do not want to hit the corpus of over, you want to leave it at 5%. So by investing in this, it put it to over 6%, you know, so we've gone a percent over. So then, you know, we're going to say, oh, well, we have $20 billion in there. Why don't we just do another, you know, half a percent? Before you know it, you're going to keep chipping away until you don't have that 5% corpus anymore. And we don't have that right now, which I think is a huge mistake. And then secondly, there was already $300 million that was allocated for early childhood education that hasn't even been spent. Well, they can't even find providers to be able to spend this money for early childhood education in New Mexico. So now we have, you know, over $400 million for early childhood education. And then the other thing, I guess the third thing I should say is that the population in New Mexico is declining. People are not having babies anymore in New Mexico. So it does not make sense for us. It sounded good. You know, it sounded good. Who doesn't want to have early childhood education? But are the numbers there to support it? And they're not, in order to do what we did in terms of what I say invading the land grant permanent fund.
You know, it's quite interesting because one of the biggest hurdles that we're going to be facing, especially with all this money, and it's going to, you know, hopefully that the communities that really need it or the counties and so on, is the inflation factor. I'm telling you, it is. I'm telling you, I don't know how. Let me tell you, George, man, I came up here. I brought my lunch for 2 days. And I was not going to eat in Santa Fe and at all. So I brought lunch and chips and you name it. I did it. But, man, the inflation is unbelievable there, Harry.
It is crazy. It is crazy. I mean, eggs are, what now, $6, $7 a dozen? I mean, I just can't believe it. You and my wife and I are going to get some chickens. We're going to build a chicken coop. And we're going to make sure that we have chickens and meat to eat, you know, in the future, because it's just unbelievable. You know, and you just keep seeing everything going up and up and up. I say gas prices are going to continue to go up. We saw a little bit of a, you know, slide in the price here in the last couple of months, and I think it's going to go back up, you know, by June. Heck, we're going to be paying $4 or $5 a gallon.
Probably. Well, the interesting thing with the roads being bad, gas being up, I'm going to have to come up to Santa Fe on a bicycle. What do you think about that, Harry?
Yeah, at this rate, that's probably not a bad idea.
What do you think about that, George?
Well, easier said than done, Raul.
What's it?
That it's easier said than done. You know, there is a guy in Silver City who's made it up to Santa Fe on his bicycle, but it took more than one day.
Oh, it took more than one day?
Yeah.
Hey, George, do you have any questions? Do you have any bond chance there?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a question for Harry?
Yeah, I do. This is a serious question. You know, from the very beginning of my days, I always wanted to know how you pronounce amyotrophic. Did I get it right, Harry?
It's a myotrophic, Joyce.
Well, you see, this is a very valuable guest to have on, because I've always wondered about that. Go ahead.
I got another secret, and I don't know. I'm going to keep it hush, hush, and quiet, and I'm not going to say very much about it. So please, let us not repeat this again, okay there, George? I just got knocked out again on the best dressed guy. You got to see this guy. I mean, not even Dr. Rosser can put a candle to this dude.
Well, that means that necessarily means that Harry's got to come down here.
Yeah. That's right. And not only that, we're glad to hear that you admitted that you finally admitted Dr. Rosser's ahead of you on that.
Hey, well, you should have seen Raul yesterday, man. He was, gee, I was raised for them to say, admit the Grant County, Raul, pull me up by. Hey, I thought it was too good on the Senate floor there, George, okay?
All right.
But any other questions for Harry by any chance here, George?
Well, I think that if Harry can explain how it is that he came to correctly pronounce amyotrophic.
So Harry, what are your plans for the rest of the day? I know you're heading back to the Roundhouse in a few minutes. Yeah. And yesterday, I think it was Health Day, and
Grant County Day.
So something every day is an adventure, isn't it?
Yeah. Every day they have acknowledging. You know, we've already had Gallup McKinley Day. We had Roosevelt Curry Day. Union County had their day already. Grant County. So they'll just keep coming up, and then they recognize different groups. In fact. George, we did recognize the ALS. I'm just going to say ALS. It's a lot easier to pronounce. We had ALS Day, you know, and there's been a lot of people that have, you know, come through that you hear about and to meet them. That's been the other part of that's been really enjoyable is
meeting all these people and then seeing people like you and others, Dennis Lopez, from commissioner from Roosevelt County, and just a lot of people that I haven't seen in years, you know, since a lot of this pre-COVID stuff. But it's always, there's always an adventure going on each and every day. And there's always a word that trips me up every day. Come on, and I don't think I could be one of the Bill readers there. Let me tell you there, Harry.
I'm glad you recognize that, Ralph. I'm glad you're ready.
Anything that you would like to say to listeners? Because right now, you know, thanks to the New Mexico counties, they send out a news brief about when we're coming on the show, whenever we're talking about legislative issues or any elected officials and so on. You have done pretty much everything in Santa Fe, and I really appreciate the service that you've done, and you still got hair. You know what I mean? I still got hair. It's almost completely white now, or gray. I don't know. Gray they say is supposed to be more distinguished or something like that. But hey, and then the Bible, it says that gray hair is that of wisdom also. So hey, I keep trying to remind myself of that.
But you know that.
I think you do a great job, great service with what you do with your radio program. And just say to the voters, you know, stay informed, stay educated on what's going on out there, follow what's going on. Let your legislators know what your priorities are in terms of addressing the needs in your community. Because without the involvement of the community, Raul, I mean, really, we can't address the issues that really need to be addressed without knowing from them what are the issues that are important to you. So I just say, stay informed, stay educated, and pray hard. Well, that's pretty much the bottom line. We've got to pray hard. Hey, yeah, you know, one thing that I really need to ask, okay? You know, we were in the world of Zoom, okay? And I like being down at home, and then I'm always watching the committee meetings and so on. I mean, how important is it to either email or text your legislatures? I mean, what's the best way to get a hold of these guys? Because I'm telling you, yesterday, it was just amazing. I'm trying to get with people, talking to them. You're in and out. And then yesterday, we had the Aldo Leopold kids. There, I mean, they were packing the house like you wouldn't believe. So you're going to one of the rooms to meet one of the legislatures and so on. And I mean, you got to wait in line. So these guys are just constantly, you know, to get your message across will be pretty much the best thing to do, Harry.
I think all of the above, everything that you said, call them, email them. And if you can personally make that contact, I mean, whatever, however you can do it. And sometimes it's all of the above. All of the above, it really is, because there's issues that are, I know, that important to constituents, that they'll do whatever they need to do to make sure that they get their message. And a lot of them want to know, you know, did they get my message? Because, you know, sometimes you'll call and they say, oh, you'll get the message to the legislator. And
do you know how many representatives and senators I left a message to text me? Not the representative, but their, I guess secretaries or whatever, to text me whenever he has availability. I didn't get one text yesterday, Harry.
Yeah. See, that's what's kind of sketchy sometimes in terms of are they really getting their messages, and if they are, you know, that's one of the things that I, you know, prided myself on, you know, by the grace of God, because it's important that constituents hear from you. And I think to this day, if you talk to any constituents here in Santa Fe County, they'll say, you know, Harry always returned my phone call. He always got back to me. And those are things that are important, because people want to know that you care, and that you're showing them that you care about them, and that what they have to say is important to them. And it's kind of, you know, in a sense, disappointing that they don't return someone like you, you know, who is an elected official or has been an elected official and has some pretty serious issues that need to be discussed with them, and to not get back is they need to either apologize to you or call you right away.
I'll meet you later on, and you can take me to lunch. That sounds even better. All right.
Exactly.
Well, Harry, we really appreciate it. I know you're going to head to the Roundhouse right now, and it's only we're actually at the New Mexico counties, and it's just it's probably a couple blocks away. And no matter how you look at it, it's cold out here. There
it is. It is, man. It's been like between 10 and 20 the last two, 3 weeks already. I'm ready for some warm weather down in Silver City.
Oh, yeah, down in Silver City. Well, you know, I really missed you at the basketball game yesterday at 6 a.m. I was hoping for you to show up, but even Howie pointed out and said, hey, Raul, well, how many points did you score? Man, I can barely move right now. I haven't touched the ball in 2 years.
Well, that's why you didn't see me there. Number one, it was at 6 o'clock in the morning. And number two, I haven't touched the ball since the last time I saw you, and that was 2 or 3 years ago already. And since then, I haven't even touched the basketball. So, no, you ain't going to see me out there anytime soon. I got to do some practice at home and then go out in public. Straight for about 3 days and then go out there and hit the course. Well, thanks a lot, Harry Montoya. I really appreciate you showing up and enjoy your beautiful day here at the Roundhouse.
Absolutely, Raul. Always good to see my brother. And you take care. I love you and love your folks down in Silver City, and hope to head down and visit you all soon.
And once again, one of the most sharp-dressed men in the state of New Mexico. George, you got to see this guy. Oh, my gosh, he is just, he's wearing a pink suit. I mean, this guy's amazing. I don't know if he's going to a club or to the Roundhouse, one or the other.
Same thing.
So once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, New Mexico. George, I'm telling you, we need some dinero to probably buy you a hearing aid or something, you know, because it's very important to keep this radio station up and rocking. So can you give me a hand there, George?
Yeah. You know, Raul. You know, Raul. It is important for us to get some money, and along those lines, I have an important announcement. Our winner's fundraiser is going to start a week from tomorrow.
That's right.
Actually, it's a week from Saturday, isn't it?
Week from Saturday, right?
Right, and I think that Ken is probably in much better position to explain how to give money to the station than I am this morning. And the reason for that is, as Mr. Montoya was saying, you know, gray hair is a sign of wisdom. And Ken, along those lines, is unquestionably the wisest guy in town.
Well, it's gray and white. Yeah, that's right.
No, but the difference there, the hair is coming out at the wrong end.
No, it's actually coming out both ends. It's like when you go to Mexico and eat the wrong stuff, man. Anyway, yeah, so here we are. And if you'd like to become a member pre-join before we start our fundraiser on the 11th, which I would like to remind everybody out there, on the 11th, we're going to have an open house here.
That's right. You can see the beautiful interior of our studio.
Yes.
That we now own it, by the way.
Yes.
Thanks to Janie Katz and Susie Calhoun.
Right. That's right. And thank you, Janie and Susie, very much for that. And so now we get to be our own landlords.
That's
I am my own landlord. Anyway, if you'd like to join, you can go to gmcr.org, and there'll be something there that says donate up at the top. And sometimes that, you know, make sure you get over to the left, because sometimes on some computer screens you have to kind of scroll over to get far enough over to get to the donate button, and you can push on that, and you can find all kinds of ways.
Nine healthy ways.
Nine healthy ways, that's it. It's better than Wonder Bread. All kinds of, this is Wonder Radio, and leaping tall buildings in one bound. And you can become a member, and you can find all these different methods of becoming a member, or you can write a check out to GMCR to any amount you'd like, even if it's hard to fit all those numbers in that little space they give you on there. But remember, it's easy to write 1 million. You know, that's very easy to do. Yes, and
you know what, Ken and George, you know, it's great that, you know, we got the whole state listening in. And it's very important that we get the message out, and hopefully that we can continue to do this. And I do want to thank the New Mexico counties for doing the things they do. I just saw Susan Mays, and I told her, Susan, come on the show for a few minutes just to talk. She's a very shy lady.
But wouldn't you think I'm going to have to get her on the show so she can have a discussion? Because let me tell you, she is a mover and shaker here for the whole state of New Mexico. But, you know, what I like to talk about is yesterday we actually went to the – we were at the roundhouse at room 303, and Howie Morales, Saya, and Luis Terraza, they actually spoke. And I got to say that Kim Clark and Julie Morales and Priscilla Luceros, I'm telling you, they're phenomenal on how they ran that show. And they're at the roundhouse. I call it the show, but it was very informative and so on. And I just want to say, when you sit in the galley and you got majority of Grant County there, it just gives you a very warm feeling on, you know, on how the support we have here for, you know, here in Santa Fe for Grant County. And it was just amazing. And then yesterday evening, they actually had, and it was a very long, long day. I'm telling you, you step into that roundhouse and you're going around in circles, doing your thing, whatever the case may be. I mean, time just flies. So at 5:30, we actually had a, reception, and the place was packed there at La Fonda. And let me just tell you how amazing, how we all are so, I mean, it's just wonderful to hang around together and talk and just talk about the legislative stuff and hopefully to find out how we can have, you know, help out the, you know, our community, because it's well needed in so many ways. And I just want to do a couple little breakdowns on the higher public and early childhood education. Western New Mexico University, their capital request is $45,000. $15,000 for the New Mexico Center Excellent for Early Childhood Education and Vocational Technology of $15,000, and Carbon Net Natural Campus Initiative of $15,000. And another one for Western New Mexico University was a for college education base of network teachers is about $550,000. And hopefully to continue over $1 million. And also Western Early Childhood at $400,000 for the New Mexico Center Excellent of Early Childhood Education Operations, hopefully to reach $1 million. They're also looking for the athletics at men's basketball, baseball, and women's soccer of $750,000.
Wait a minute. Did you just say baseball? We don't have a baseball team.
I know, but I hope they're trying to put a baseball together, and that would make Logan one of the happiest guys in the world, because of they kind of took it away in the 80s, and it would be nice to have women's soccer and also men's baseball. And the initiative is about $750,000. And they have another one for Associated Students of Western for solar charging projects of $400,000. And also outdoor industry of $150,000 for the Center of Substance Future of Outdoor Programming, the nursing program over close to $1 million, social works at about $1 million, Aldo Leopold Charter Schools. You're looking at the suburban activity transportation vehicle, about $160,000, facility improvements, about $150,000, outdoor classrooms at $75,000. As a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons the Aldo Leopold Charter Schools are up here, so they can actually lobby for the outdoor classrooms and also like the free lunch program. And I just want to say another sharp-looking guy was our superintendent from Silver High. He was amazing. We sat there and talked, all kinds of things going on. And also, Cobra Consolidated School, they have an IT technology improvement, including security cameras, and they're asking for $468,000. Their athletic complex improvements, about $500,000. And Silver Consolidated Schools, it's really nice that the only thing that they're asking is equipment for school buses at $330,000. So one of the main reasons we're all here together is you look at tourism. You know, the Circle Theater, they need an improvement of about $260,000 for equipment and furnishing, or we're going to be there tonight, George. And the Fort Beard Historical Preservation Society is asking for $100,000 for the Fort Beard property. And the Tour of the Gila under the House Bill two junior funds asking for $50,000. So, you know, in the reality, we're not here asking for billions and billions of dollars. We're just helping so we can get things moving. Gila Wilderness Centennial Celebration for Grand County for the National Forest. You're looking at the Gila National Forest at $50,000, and that's actually going to be coming out of the junior bill also. The Upper Gila Watershed is asking for $95,000. The Water Irrigation Association at $96,000. And let me tell you, George, and Ken and the Saboritos out there, quite a lot of individuals, water is one of the most important things that we're going to be looking at down the road. Because if I open up the Santa Fe New Mexican magazine, I'm telling you, it is scary about what's going on with the water situation. So the Upper Waterhead Ditch is asking for $100,000. The Grijalva Ditch Association, $100,000. The Heredia Community Ditch Association at $200,000. The Tahoe Community Ditch Association for Improvements at $75,000. The Tyrone Watershed Association at $100,000. The Casa de Dobres, and they're actually looking for a backhoe for $125,000. The Hanover MDWC Water System Improvements at $110,000. Elano Acuera Association is looking for $50,000. And the Southwest New Mexico Council is supporting for, you know, statewide at about $50,000. So there's a lot going on up here. And Gila Regional, I have to kind of break down on Gila Regional, where Gila Regional Medical Center for Temptree System Equipment at $800,000 for equipment, telecommunication equipment at $450,000, and an MRI equipment at $1 million. And I got to see old Dan Otero out here, up here, because it was actually Health Day yesterday, and HMS Hidalgo Medical Services, and that's for the 14-day crisis abilities unit facility plan to design, construct, and equip at $500,000. And they're actually helping us to support the rural mental health services. The Center of Health Innovations of Public Institutes, they're actually to support the partners of New Mexico Health and public health infrastructure so they can develop more behavioral health and primary health workforce, the public access for data, community decision-making, and policy development. Also, Grand County Community Health Council. And matter of fact, it was an honor to see quite a lot of the individuals for HMN, and not only did here, and also Grand County. We saw Cassandra, now that she's working for HMS, and we spoke for a little while, and it was quite interesting on what we're up here for. Grand County Community Health Council, under HB 49, supports the funding statewide packages to support each county tribal health council of $125,000 per year, council address for health equity for the New Mexico communities at hopefully up to about $5,750,000. And under the House Bill Junior 2 fund request, you're looking at $50,000. The Commons Center for Food Security, and let me tell you one thing, what an awesome program. You're looking at what David Chandler is doing and so on, Alicia Edwards. I think it's a very, very important, where they want to extend it to Santa Clara food security security facilities, purchasing plans, design, and trust, and equip and furnish for $200,000. The National Centers of Frontier Communities is funding the Frontier Food Hub pantry services to support, expand local food system economic development and food security for rural New Mexico under House Bill 2 for junior funds. And honestly, the list goes a little bit longer, but I am going to go ahead and go through it all if it's okay with you, George. Is that all right, George? You're not going to get mad at me?
Well, before you do that, I just want to say that the Food Hub and the Commons have been doing amazing things, providing really essential services for hundreds and hundreds of families in Grant County. So I certainly hope that all of their projects get fully funded, because they certainly deserve it, and it's an important thing to do.
Well, you know what? The last time I was talking to David Chandler, it kind of like
doubled whenever they had to distribute food, like for the seniors and so on, and to help out the community. And let me tell you, he has done a phenomenal job. And hopefully that they can get some funding, especially moving it over to the mining district.
Well, yeah, there's a big need there, and they certainly... You know, it's not only just Dave Chandler. The people operating the food hub are major players in all that, and they do an extremely good job. I know that the food hub is interested in starting programs that will become self-sustaining. And, you know, since there's a lot of this $3.6 billion in new money, it seems to me that this would be the time. It would be a very wise investment to put a lot of money into those programs right now.
Well, okay, George, the next time I come up here to Santa Fe, you're coming with me, all right? And you're driving.
Good luck. You've never driven with me, Raul. Your hair would be white.
You'll get lost, besides.
I know. He'll get lost when we hit Santa Clara. So under the local government there, George and Ken, okay, the fund cap outlay needs for water projects and support colonias, funding for the housing initiatives, okay? For Green County, looking for Bataan Memorial Park, hope one of these days they can actually finish it so we can actually go play ball comfortably there at the Bataan Memorial Park at about $500,000 to furnish and equip and construct. And also Memorial Park under House Bill 2 Junior Funds is requesting $60,000. And the outdoor recreation plan implementation house plan for Bill 2 Junior funds at $50,000. And here we go, the Gila Community Center, plan, design, and construct, and equip. They're asking for $400,000, and that's for Green County. And then I got to see Alex Brown, a couple of the commissioners, Lupecano, and it was nice to sit there and have some discussion. So under the town of Silver City, the city hall annex renovation plans designed to construct and renovate and equip at $650,000 for the annex building. Golf park planning improvements, you're looking at $500,000. The Little Walnut Road improvement at $8 million to plan and design, construct, and repair. And here's the one I'm going to be screaming loud for is the Silver City Golf Course under House Bill 2 Junior requesting $100,000. Maybe they might buy new golf balls or something. What do you think, George?
That's pretty amazing.
Okay, all right. I thought I'd throw that out there.
No George. Comment.
Okay. Yeah, stop it there, Ken. You know, and the city of Baird, matter of fact, I got to see Chon Fierro, the mayor, Shiva Hutman from Santa Clara. The mayor from Santa Clara, Bosch, was there, so we all sat down and talked. And once again, Ed Stevens was here from the mayor from Ernie, so pretty much everybody's up here except you guys there, Ken and George. But City of Baird, they have the wastewater system, and they're only asking for $250,000. The sewer vac truck purchase, they're asking for $400,000 for a vac truck, and it's for the sewer plan and so on. So municipal road and drainage projects, designs, they're asking for $250,000. And here we go, Hurley, New Mexico, or I call it Hurleywood, recreation improvement purchase for $250,000 to construct and equip for the recreation. And the cemetery improvement, and that's actually for $250,000. They're looking at a street sweeper for $250,000. And Village of Santa Clara, the copper trails, and matter of fact, Sheila and the mayor, they're actually meeting with the new general manager today with Howie and Saya, and hopefully that they can find a way to start annexing, Fort Baird, because they need to find a way to annex, and it doesn't mean ownership. It really helps out on insurance and so on, because I had a long talk with Sheila last night about it, and hopefully if I had some time, I'd stick around for those meetings. And the Village of Santa Clara for trails, for the bicycle plans at $150,000, the water system improvement at $75,000, and City Hall improvements for $50,000. And the Fort Baird improvement under the House Bill 2 is requesting $50,000. So the Southwest Solid Waste Authority is looking for a roll-off truck at $225,000, a bullwind fence, a bullwind fences at $90,000, and they're looking for a backhoe for $150,000. So that's just Grand County, you guys, and we have other 33 counties, and hopefully that they can actually spread the wealth. So talk to me, George.
Well, you know, it's a good thing that there's the $3.6 billion in new money. There are a lot of needs, and I hope that they all get funded. But you know, Raul, it's really good that you're up there. It's really good that all the prospectors were there yesterday for Grant County Day. In terms of what's of local significance right now, it's also really important for our listeners to pay pretty close attention to what's going on in a place where there is absolutely no common sense at all, and all there are sound bites on Fox News. There is a big threat pending, and that is what's going to happen to Social Security. The Republicans ran up the largest deficit, the third largest deficit, while Donald Trump was president by cutting corporate taxes. And, of course, there was no problem with the debt, with raising the debt ceiling when that was going on. Now we're stuck with this legacy, and suddenly the deficit is a big national problem. And apparently, it seems to me anyway, that the Republican agenda is to cut back on Social Security and Medicare. Kevin McCarthy was on one of the Sunday talk shows, and he said, oh, well, any changes in Social Security and Medicare is off the table, and it's always been that way. All you need to do is to look at a document that they published at the beginning of the session of Congress called Commitment to America. He encouraged everyone to go read it. Well, I did. And what it says in the Commitment to America is Social Security has to be reformed, and we have to reduce benefits. That's their agenda. That's what they want to do. And, of course, if they were to do that, it would have kind of an adverse effect on our local economy. Yep. So it's really important for our listeners to pay attention to that, too. You know, it's a benefit to be able to be in a roundhouse where people actually talk in complete sentences and try to engage in real facts. But, you know, we have to get past all of the things related to Israeli lasers and Hunter Biden's laptop and George Santos's coaching abilities with the Philadelphia Eagles, you know. This is really serious. I mean, these guys are definitely out to try and make life difficult for every middle-class and working-class American citizen, and it has to be stopped. I'll get off my soapbox.
I'm glad that you know, you spoke about it, because I read a little bit on that. And you know what? There's a lot of movements coming up here also in Santa Fe. You know, the level of cabinet turnovers is unbelievable. I don't know if you read that. And I'm looking at a lot of these individuals that are actually being turned over, you know, for the government administration. And there's probably about 25, 26 of them. And I'm telling you, they have them for the Aging and Long-Term Services Department that was replaced. And I'm not going to mention their names because I'd be here all day, because we're going to be in the top of the hour in a few minutes. Children, Youth, and Family Department has been replaced, the Department of Corrections, Department of Cultural Affairs, Early Childhood Education Care Department, Economic Development, Energy, Mineral, and Natural Resources, the Department, Environmental Department, Department of Finance Administration. So, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So I guess we're coming in with a new slate coming in with these next 4 years here at the Roundhouse. And I guess people need to be aware and keep track of what exactly, you know, is going on here. And once again, like you were saying about nationally, I mean, let me tell you, man,
I hope one of these days I get my Social Security there, George.
Well, good luck.
Well, I mean, you know, I feel that if people don't believe in Social Security or anything else, I know there's a party that has hated any kind of government assistance to the citizens of the United States as opposed to corporations and wealthy people, have hated Medicare since the 60s. They've hated Social Security since the 40s.
Right.
You know, and they'll never give this up. This is one of those things. So you have to remember that when you vote, if they're telling you to vote for crime, if they're telling you to vote because of inflation or anything else like that, remember what their bottom line is. Their bottom line is to get rid of these things they've been trying to get through rid of for years and years. And if you believe in that, those are the people you should vote for. But if you have anybody who depends on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, maybe you might want to rethink your feelings about that.
I think and you're exactly right. I mean, because you know what, you know, like Harry was talking about, you know, look at the state of New Mexico, we're losing population, you know, and we have an aging population coming in, you know, in New Mexico, and we really take care, we need to take care of our seniors. They took care of us, and it's time for us to take care of them. And I think it's really important to, you know, we got to keep the ball rolling.
You know, as one of those seniors, I'd like to point out that money was deducted from my paychecks, and I paid taxes every year.
Me too.
Based on the assumption that I was going to get Social Security retirement benefits. You know, all these guys who say, oh, my word is my bond, you know, those are the kind of guys you really need to be very careful about, because, you know, they have absolutely no hesitation in going back on their commitment.
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe they're talking about bail bonds.
You know,
I mean, okay, and that's some of them, you know, like George Santos, you know.
Oh, you mean the astronaut?
Yes, right, the astronaut, George.
The astronaut NFL coach?
Right. That's right. And, I mean, there's a lot of stuff, you know, that people have to really pay attention to now, because fear, every time somebody brings up something to try to frighten you, you know, then that's what's going to happen, you know, because of a certain group of, often like minorities. And remember, if they can go after African-Americans and be anti-Semitic, they can be anti-Hispanic, they can be anti-everything else too, if it's going to get them elected by people who are afraid of people that are different than they are. And that's what they want to do. They want to make you afraid, so you vote for them, and then they get in. And the first thing they did this time here is they cut money for the IRS. Now, the IRS is the people that collect the money that keep this country going. You know, and if you defund them, then you're not going to get, you know, they don't have the money to go after rich people with tons of lawyers.
Oh, you mean they're not going to audit the guy who who sells condominiums to people like Baby Doc Duvalier and Trump Tower, you know?
Yeah, right.
Why audit him? He's a nice guy.
That's right, exactly. So, you know, I mean, that's all important stuff. It's not like, and they keep saying, it's like, oh, this is like your own household thing, you know? Well, in your own household, almost everybody's got a mortgage, you know? And they have to pay that mortgage every month. And what that party is doing is, by cutting the IRS, they're basically going to their boss and say, boss, I don't need this. I don't need to get this much money. Cut my wages, you know, because that's wasteful to pay that money to me. I have to change my mortgage payments, you know. And then you go to the bank and they say, you're not changing your mortgage payments, man. You know, and that's what's happening. And also, remember, the debt is about money that they have already spent. That they have to spend. That's what it's about. This isn't about the future or anything else. These are the people that are raising hell about this, that have voted many of them, to raise those rates. Okay, it's
absolutely
almost, it's the center of our program.
So, we'll take us.
We're hitting the top of the hour here at KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico. We got George Esparza, the executive director from the New Mexico Counties, coming on board at 9 o'clock this morning. So we're going to take a small break.
KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Welcome back for the second course of Local Flavor with your host, Raul Turrieta. You never know exactly what's on the menu, but just open wide and prepare to say, ah. Take a sip of cool, clear water, clear the palate, say excuse me if you burp, and enjoy our feast for the ears here on Local Flavor.
Programming on GMCR is made possible by its members and supporters, including Western New Mexico University Cultural Affairs, presenting Albuquerque Jazz Orchestra featuring Hillary Smith, an 18-member big band jazz orchestra. Experience them live at Light Hall on Thursday, February 9th at 7 p.m. Information and tickets at wnmu.edu.
Well, we're back.
Good morning. Yes, I am here in Silver City, Nuevo Mexico. Man, being here in Santa Fe, what a beautiful, beautiful day we have here in Santa Fe. So, how's it going down there? There, George, you miss me?
No. We're
crying, and we're hoping that you can make it back safely and promptly because
The next month.
Now he's got a big gig tonight, Ken.
Oh, that's right.
No, it's going to be the opening act for the stand-up comedy at the Silco Theater starting at 7 o'clock.
Oh, great.
I think I'm going to be late for that one there, you guys. I'm a little bit nervous. I have nothing to say. I have nothing to say, you guys.
Well, that's certainly one of your major qualities.
Yes, it is. We've noticed that.
You're going to have to try and crawl out of your introspective shell there and wow the audience.
Well, I have joined the equipment for Bishop County here, and joined. I've got to open up a cooking show.
You're breaking up.
That sounds like an awful lot of fun, Raul. I agree with George that you're so shy, it might be really difficult for you.
So what do you think, you guys, George? So, Julie, you know, we're here in Santa Fe. I know you've been part of the New Mexico counties. And just tell me a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Raul. It's a pleasure to be here today. And I have been the executive director for New Mexico counties since October. I've actually been with the organization since 2003. So happy to step up and had just great mentors throughout those years with a number of executive directors like Steve Kopelman, who recently retired, and Paul Gutierrez, who's gone back to D.C., and of course, Sam Montoya, who I know you mention regularly on your show. This is my passion. I love working in policy and love New Mexico counties because that's where the rubber meets the road.
So, Joy, I know you've been starting from the ground up. Do you ever get any sleep here in Santa Fe with the job you have now?
Somewhere between the hours of about midnight and 4:45 in the morning.
Well, you know, I know that... that you actually are under the board for the New Mexico counties. And can you explain the process on how these priorities for the, you know, for the New Mexico counties and where are we at this point?
Great question. So we work on our legislative platform throughout the entire year. We have a large summer conference that takes place in June that moves to different locations around the state, and all 20 of our affiliate groups meet at that conference. So by affiliate groups, these are committees made up of commissioners, managers, treasurers, fire and emergency managers, all of the different elected as well as professional staff in the counties. And they vet initiatives that they are aware of that may be potentially coming towards us in the next legislative session. From that point, we bring those initiatives forward to what we consider our legislative committee, which includes our executive committee members, any members from our policy committees, which also can bring initiatives forward. Those are vetted thoroughly. We talk about things that may be a carryover from prior years that we're going to continue to champion because not everything gets passed in 1 year. Sometimes it takes years to get them moving. From there, they go to our board of directors, and our board of directors vets them with the respective affiliates and the insights from the executive committee, and they choose whether or not to endorse the initiatives. If they're endorsed by the board of directors, that means that the affiliate can then proceed to advocate for them. If they are not endorsed, which happens rarely, they kind of go back to the drawing board to see what other options may be. We're a nonpartisan organization, so we're very conscientious of the fact that these need to be bipartisan support. They need to fix actual problems that we're having in the local governments or come up with solutions and innovations that make jobs more efficient and easier. From that group of endorsed initiatives, the board will select anywhere from about 3 to 5 priorities. And those become the first plan of attack or essentially our primary focus for our internal legislative team during the session. We do continue to work closely with the affiliates for technical expertise about how a bill might affect the assessors or the treasurers. But ultimately, it's the board of directors that sets the platform and determines what's permissible under the umbrella of Mexico counties and the affiliate.
And you know what, Joy? You know what, Joy? One thing that that I was going to ask is they were talking for Grand County Day, and I guess our representative Terrazas actually was saying that they were working on the return to work. And I guess one of the biggest hurdles, and I know it's one of the priorities, one of the biggest priorities about return to work, and who was pretty much against that was Albuquerque. And we actually...
Hey, Raul, we lost you. Well, apparently we have some technical difficulties here. Raul was interviewing Joy Esparza, who is the executive director of the New Mexico Counties, which is a significant lobbying organization representing basically the elected officials from all 33 New Mexico counties. We will try and reestablish contact with Raul and
from Albuquerque in particular, APD, and they're very legitimate concerns. And just to kind of share some of that background, when you have people retire and they're able to come back, you really want to capitalize on that expertise because you've trained them, you've brought them to a position of leadership. But what they saw was a return of individuals back into leadership positions, which then affects any additional succession for other employees. So that's a really legitimate concern that was brought to our attention. And I think that's part of where you hear of the pushback is it's usually in those details. Now, that being said, there are lots of return to work bills that are proposing different types of solutions with the workforce shortages on how they can solve that. We have one area of focus that's part of our legislative platform this year having to do with detention officers. We are seeing significant vacancies in our jails, and that is a very critical issue for us. So we have actually are working on a very targeted and very narrow return to work specifically for those corrections officers. And we've talked to the unions who have traditionally been opposed to this, but we've talked to them about what guardrails could we put in place to address this very important crisis need that we're having. And so we've been working through solutions such as they have to sit out for a certain period of time. Maybe they don't come back into those higher positions I was mentioning. Maybe they have to come back in as kind of front line. Maybe they can only serve for a limited number of months just to get us through the crisis. So our legislative team has been working through that, but it's those nuances of legislation that are so important to understand when you hear of that type of pushback.
George, any comments on that? Because I know tomorrow we're going to have our Zola from our corrections coming on the show tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Any comments on that, George?
Well, Raul, Grant County is unique among the 33 counties largely because of Mr. Arizola. We don't have much in the way of staff shortages at the Grant County Detention Center. But this is a very big problem for the smaller rural counties. I've been hearing stories about one detention center that's working at only 25% of their positions are filled. You know, and detention centers go 24/7, 365 days a year. The demand that gets put on the staff under those kind of circumstances is really untenable. So there has to be some kind of solution, and I'm really glad to hear that there is this effort that's specifically directed to the detention officers because it's a really serious problem.
George,
go ahead, George.
Thank you for that. And I think that 25% that you referenced is not uncommon. We are seeing that very broadly throughout the state, and it isn't just the rural areas. We're seeing that in urban areas as well. And so it is very concerning for us. And as you mentioned, the staff that is there is really subject to burnout. And so we just compound the problem then by not addressing this really critical need.
And, Joey, you know, you're looking at what's going on with the, I just named out just Grant County on all the requests on capital outlay. Joey, that's a lot of money. I'm telling you, this is the most I've ever seen, and you've been part of county government for a long time. What do you think about this? We were talking to Harry earlier, and he was all for a lot of this money should actually go in through infrastructure. Give me some opinion about all this money that's out there that it's going to be like a one-time deal.
You know, it's something where both the state and local governments have unprecedented money for infrastructure, broadband, water, wastewater, and sewer. And a lot of this is coming from the congressional bipartisan infrastructure law that was passed. So with these unprecedented numbers, the legislature and local governments are looking at ways that they can complete outstanding projects. They are looking at ways that they can do things in completable phases so that we make sure that these projects continue to be moved along in a logical manner. Now, that being said, those same staff vacancies that we're talking about happen in other departments of both state and local agencies. And so having the staff resources to put these projects in place, to get them moving, to keep them moving, to manage them, finding construction workers, working through permitting when there may be vacancies in the permitting offices, all of these are a very broad problem that we're seeing, and it slows down the completion of several of these capital projects. So I would say we're working really closely with local legislators to address those outstanding projects and make sure that with this infusion of money, we can complete these projects either in a specific phase or in their entirety so that we really need these legacy investments in New Mexico.
And you know what, Joey? Thanks for that answer. Just to keep the state of New Mexico rolling, that's pretty much the issue itself. But you know what? Once again, I do want to thank Susan Mays from the New Mexico Counties. She actually puts a lot of these interviews together. And we had Glenn Hamilton on the other day, and we talked about the detention reimbursement fund also. And that's increasing the County Detention Facility Reimbursement Act. And it actually went down to about $2 million. Hopefully that they actually we can bring it up to $5 million, and according to the sense of the commission, the 5-year average hopefully would be $7.5 million. So where are we at on that there, Joy?
Great discussion. And this is a bill that would actually encourage in House Bill 2 to increase the amount to 7.5. So during the last legislative session, as you mentioned, they restored the amount to $5 million. But if we look at the 3 to 5 year average from the New Mexico Sentencing Commission, we feel that amount should be closer to 7.5. So that is our ask in House Bill 2 this year. The needs for this continue. These are for state prisoners that are returned to a county facility after violation of certain criteria on probation and parole. And the cost should not be borne by the local government if these are already designated as state prisoners. So that has been our position on this for quite some time. We actually had a lawsuit that came out of San Miguel County back in 2007 against the Department of Corrections that really addressed this, and it was found in our favor. So we really do feel that this is a state obligation to pay for their state designated prisoners.
You know, it's quite interesting because you look at back in the 70s and 80s, the what really absorbed the county budgets were actually roads, infrastructure, and now it seems like it's all turning over for detention, prisoner transportation. I mean, that's a pretty big load where it's really eating up the budgets in the counties. And honestly, and I just like to bring up something personal from our county, okay? We need, especially in the time of days that we're living, and George, I know you can support me on this. I know that there's actually courthouse funding, okay? We're not part of the courthouse anymore, and we don't have the security that they do. And I was hoping that down the road, Joy, that not only the courthouse funding that would help out, we are so, let me put it bluntly, scared that something might happen, and until it happens, and then it really hits the situation with the insurance and all stuff, deal with the New Mexico account, it's an issue, and hopefully down the road that we can actually start looking in on some of this funding to help out with the counties. And do you have any take on that there, Joy?
So courthouse funding is something that was a priority selected by the Board of Directors this year. And we did approach this last year. We worked closely with Senator Griggs and several other legislators. The reality is the statute on courthouse funding is about 100 years old. And back at that point, the local judge or the district judge was located in the county building, and there was a requirement that we continue to provide offices for them. The reality today is these courthouse buildings that are part of the state judicial system are $60 million, as I believe what Lee County recently spent for theirs. It's really an unfunded mandate onto county government. And I'm pleased to say that in this past year, we have actually had really good dialogue with the Administrative Office of the Courts and their Executive Director, Artie Pepin, as well as David Abbey with the Legislative Finance Committee. And this year, in the recommendation from the Legislative Finance Committee on their budget, is $20 million to start a fund that would be a shared revenue between local governments and the state to help provide that shared revenue for addressing some of these needs for county courthouses. Another example I had recently is that Eddy County added an additional judge, and just adding that additional judge was a $2 million impact to their general fund. So we are delighted to hear that this fund is hopefully going to move forward. We're hoping it's something that the governor's budget will also reflect. But the reality is $20 million is very low. Last year, I believe our legislative request was closer to $40 million, and we would certainly like to see a higher amount for that as it moves through the finance and appropriations process.
George, any take on any of this that we're talking about? I know you had a couple questions.
Well, in terms of this courthouse fund, one of the things that I hope that money gets used for is to create more positions for the magistrate judges. Those are the busiest judges. They have the highest caseload, and it's the place where most of the public has any interface with the judicial process. our magistrate judge who just retired said that in the years that, I guess, in more than 5 years worth of experience, she never got to sleep through an entire night because she was so busy. There's a definite need there. Generally, in my experience over the years, the judges who do the most work are the ones that don't have any staff and get paid the least amount. That sort of situation shouldn't go on. So I hope that New Mexico can go against the trend generally throughout the United States and can pay more attention to those positions.
That's a good point. One of the questions I raised as we were talking about funding for the courts is, do we have any idea how much the district court system is likely to grow in the next several years or several decades? And I think that kind of comes to your point about, do we need more judges, and if so, where? And I don't have the information on that, but I think having the funding to provide the support for the courthouses, the support staff, the IT, the infrastructure, security, I don't know that it's going to include the actual judges, but I think this is a good first step.
Well, out of all the affiliates, it would be nice if there were a magistrate judge affiliate, because those guys are really being killed.
Good point. Although, once again, that kind of goes back to why we consider it an unfunded mandate, is because the magistrate judges are part of the district courts, which is part of the state system. The counties just bear the cost for it. We do have probate judges that are part of our county affiliates, but once again, they're county specific versus the magistrate, which are state specific.
George, Ken, and Joy, we're constantly, looking on, funding and so on, and hopefully that we can continue with the revenue source, not only with the oil and gas. And this is just an off-the-wall question right now, because I'm thinking, because being on the assessment process, and, we're pretty much a revenue stream in Grand County for property taxes and so on. Is there any initiatives on cannabis, on the revenue streams, or depending mainly on oil and gas?
It's interesting. I think the state's beginning to get some hard data on the potential revenue that they will see from cannabis now that it's been rolled out. Keep in mind, when the cannabis legislation was passed, there was an agreement that it would be split, the revenues, in thirds. So a third to counties, a third to municipalities, and a third to the state. That makes a lot of sense to us, but the reality is now that we're seeing the implementation of that, the nuances such as where is the point of sale versus the grower, how are they taxed within unincorporated and within incorporated parts of the counties, those are all the details that are just now starting to take shape. So I think as the state and local governments get a better understanding about how the cannabis legislation and the industry affects them, they'll have better numbers to know what changes or tweaks need to be made moving forward, but it's still really early on in the process.
Good. Hey, George, I know talking to Joy Esparson, and I remember we used to have the hour of legislative updates during the legislative session, and Brian Moore, so we might have to have a Joy Esparson hour, man. She's doing a fantastic job, and hopefully down the road we can actually get Kathleen Crociata. I had to throw the extra A on that. My apologies. Crociata, because she's actually on the outlook, for the New Mexico counties. And hopefully that, keeping the updates, because it's going to be a long session and things are moving quite rapidly. And I'll be straight with you. You know, after seeing, our legislators in action, not only that on the basketball court, but also there at the session, it's great that they're keeping themselves fit, because it's going to be a long session, and hopefully that you can guys keep us an update on what's going on a pretty much regular basis, like Brian Moore. And Joy, have you heard anything from Brian Moore by any chance?
Last I heard, he was enjoying the view from the ocean in Florida, and we're delighted for him. We miss him dearly, but he is enjoying his quasi-retirement.
George, maybe you should go to Florida with him.
There's no way that I'm ever going to go back to Florida. I'm sorry. That part of my life is totally over with. I'm so happy. But,
Before we ask a few more questions there, Joy, I would just like to say we are getting closer to the bottom of the hour, and I would just like to say, talking about money, funding, we got George Sparson, the executive director for the New Mexico Counties. We have Ken and George, and El Gato Loco from Silver City. We do have the whole state listening in. So, like Ken was saying, man, we need a little bit of help at this wonderful radio station. So, please, Ken, throw your pitch, please.
So, yes, you can go to gmcr.org and find 9 healthy ways to become members. Just push on that donate button. Yeah, the donate button, and bring in some donuts while you're doing it. And, we will be here to eat them and accept your check as well if you want to come in person. And if you'd like to come in person on next Saturday, a week from this coming Saturday, the 11th, we're having an open house here. And it will be a way to relieve eating all the chocolate at the chocolate fantasia that's going on. You can come in here and have non-chocolate food to clear your palate. So that'll be happening as well. We actually need to make more money than we have been making if we want to keep this going. And so we are, it's hard to believe how expensive it is to run a radio station, even with all the volunteers here who don't get paid. We still have equipment, and we have a lot of work that always has to be done up on the tower and in here to keep up, because things wear out. Even DJs wear out. We're well on our way, we're well on our way to wearing out, I think.
I am, but not you.
Yeah, not me. But we're both gray anyway. So if you like to keep the station going after we exit.
Stage left.
Stage left. Exactly. Not stage right. That's for sure. You can donate, and you can come down here on a week from Saturday. Or we do have a mail slot in the door where you can take your postal services, your postal envelopes and stuff, fill them with cash or fill them with checks made out to gmcr.org and stick them through there, and we will be glad to pick them up next time we open the door. And if we're not here, but if we're here, you can come in and hand them to us in person. And you can also mail it to us at 519B North Bullard, Silver City, New Mexico, 88061. And remember, we take all amounts of money, from the smallest to the largest.
Oh, well, let's see if I can bring down some money from Santa Fe, okay? Hey, yeah, Ken and George.
We're expecting it.
Well, definitely. Matter of fact, I was going to donate a little bit more money, but I guess your San Francisco 49ers came short, way short, short. Yeah. So we're not even going to go there. We can talk about that tomorrow.
How short did they beat?
I was going to donate money for the radio station if San Francisco would beat the Eagles, but not. But show here at KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, New Mexico, we have Joyce Parson, the executive director for the New Mexico Counties. And Joyce, I do really appreciate you showing up at Grand County Days to meet our mayors, to meet a lot of president of our university. And it's a really good, you're a very good person to know, especially you being part of, the executive director for the New Mexico County. So I hope you had a good time last night.
I had a wonderful time. I was delighted that you invited me. One of the greatest things about the legislative session is having specific evenings where we can visit with our county members and meet some of their collaborative partners from their communities. And so I had a delightful time yesterday.
Well, thank you very much for participating. You know what, Joy? Under the House Bill 2 appropriation, we've been talking about detention reimbursement funds. We've been talking about transportation for prisoners and extraditions. And we're also talking about return to work under public safety packages and recruitment and retention. And once again, that was one of the discussions that for Grand County Day, there at the roundhouse when we were meeting with everybody, was one of the problems is retention and trying to keep, or hiring, because it seems, and one of the biggest comments was said that it's really hard to get these people, to get back to work. So can you talk a little bit about the recruitment and retention, if you would, please?
Certainly. So once again, there's got to be multiple approaches to address the staff vacancies. So not only do we want to do hiring events, not only do we want to find out how we can work with potentially maybe some remote workforces, so we're having to reimagine how work works, basically, but specifically for us with public safety packages. In addition to looking at a very targeted return to work for detention, many of the counties are actually adding on either retention or incentive payments for different types of correction officers. We have asked for some funding this year for additional support for emergency medical services and fire. We're finding there are significant vacancies in our volunteer firefighters and EMS statewide. So in addition to detention, when we look at public safety as a whole, we're talking law enforcement, we're talking 911 call centers. All of those areas of public safety are being significantly impacted by these vacancies. And we want to do everything we can with a really comprehensive approach to not only keep the people that we have, keep them engaged, make sure that they're not burnt out, but also how do we hire on new ones? How do we redevelop workforces? How do we change perceptions where, law enforcement for us at a local level, knowing everything they do, it is such an honorable career. But the reality is the narrative on a national level hasn't always been so positive in recent years. So we want to make sure that people know this is a really great career path, that there are great opportunities in law enforcement, that there is a great wealth of knowledge that comes from volunteering in your communities as a firefighter and being that first responder. So we're really working with changing dynamics and how do we re-engage these different generations in the workforce.
And you know what, Joy, during the New Mexico counties in January, and I remember the opening session was on the 19th, and it was through the 16th and the 19th, and our governor was actually our speaker for the legislative breakfast, and I was talking to my sheriff and other sheriffs, not just only him, about, here's the governor going to be allocating over $100 million to, increase salaries for state police and so on. One of the biggest problems that we're looking at right now is how do we compete, county-wise, to salaries like that?
That that's a great point, and something that we have articulated in a lot of our testimony to the legislature. We agree the salaries need to increase, but we're basically playing the shell game. So if the state police increase their salaries, then all of a sudden it's much more appealing for local government law enforcement to go to the state. So then we have this kind of trickle-down effect of the vacancies. And so when we were looking across the pay scales of sheriff's departments in particular, they have all but one, I think, have increased significantly in the last few years. So we are doing our best to stay ahead of that curve. But that is part of what we're seeing is this trickle-down effect. When they increase the pay at one level, it affects all the other levels of government.
And George, any take on any of these questions, if you would? Please, George, I know you got a couple questions to ask.
Well, generally, the issue of pay for law enforcement officials is a huge one. It's a big issue here, too. You know, we've been quite successful in maintaining a healthy complement of workers at our county detention center, but the prospects are that the number of employees for the mines here is they're going to be hiring. And the detention center staff is administration is sweating the possibility that people are going to be tempted to leave. And I know over on the east side of the state, the same problem is presented with all the oil and gas opportunities as well. So it's not just the state police, it's everything.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a really difficult job to have. I think that one of the encouraging things here locally is the fact that, you know, employee assistance, you know, mental health counseling and other kinds of medical services are increasing for people in law enforcement. I think that's really necessary. I don't know if that's part of the proposal for retention in the pending legislation. I certainly hope it is.
Great point, George. And mental health support and other benefits that provide resources not just to the officer but to their families is certainly something that we consider part of the entire package for that recruitment and retention. You know, one thing that's interesting in New Mexico is we have lots of funds that help, like fire and EMS, with maybe structural ignitability, things very tied to protecting structures, but those don't allow for salaries. And so the salary for EMS and fire falls directly on the local government. And we know it's such a critical service, and we do our best to allocate for it. But it makes it difficult because they can only pull the levers to increase those pay by a certain amount. So last year, we did have a piece of legislation for law enforcement that was specifically funding for recruitment and retention. So one of the things we've been talking about this year with the legislature is could we expand that to include recruitment and retention for detention officers and for fire and EMS, because there are not other funds at the state that help specifically with those personnel costs.
Interesting. Well, you know what, Joy, George, I would just like to go ahead and mention one other thing where it is under a priorities for the New Mexico counties. And once again, this is the 56th session of the legislature. I thought I'd mention that. But one other thing there, Joy, that we haven't pretty much covered with is the emergency medical service, okay? And that's creating $10 million to a line item for the Department of Health Emergency Medical Service. So can you talk a little bit about the Bureau budget on that?
Absolutely. So this is a bill that is Senate Bill number 23, and it's being carried by Senator Campos. And this is something that kind of ties into our overall support for public safety that we've been championing for a number of years. If you recall, we addressed the Fire Protection Fund to make sure that 40 million of it was no longer reverting to the general fund, so now it's all going to where it was intended to be. But part of that is emergency medical services. And so that is the next component, where right now there is funding provided through the Department of Health EMS Bureau that goes to all the fire districts. So this is municipal, county, statewide. And the fund used to be about about $10 million, and much like our detention fund, has been reduced in recent years down to a little over $2 million, $2.5 million. So our goal this year, and we're working hand-in-hand with the New Mexico Municipal League, would be to infuse $10 million into that process that already exists. This will certainly help all the fire districts with supplies. Once again, this is not salary, but it helps with their PPEs. It helps with, personal protective devices. It helps with AED purchases. You have to remember the technology doesn't get cheaper. It gets more expensive. I believe it also helps with some of the training opportunities for EMS. So we see this as just one of a first step in supporting EMS services, much like we have done now for law enforcement and fire. We look at this as a very comprehensive approach to really stand up and support public safety at the local level.
George?
I want to shift gears here for just a second. I know that the Municipal League, the New Mexico Municipal League, is quite concerned about some issues in related to tax and revenue, and specifically there is a concern about freezing the ability of local governmental entities to adjust their component of GRT taxes. Is this something that's an issue of concern to New Mexico counties?
Taxes are always one of our biggest concerns, and primarily because of unintended consequences. So if you remember when the governor many years ago pulled off the food and medical tax, they estimated that the impact to local governors or local governments would be about $40 million, and it ended up being well over $100 million. So anytime that they are talking about changes to the tax system, we care a lot about getting accurate data that really is going to show how it's going to impact local governments, because the reality is no two local governments are the same. Their portfolios for what they get in GRT versus maybe fees versus maybe property taxes are all different. So we really ask the legislature, whenever they're affecting taxes, to not look at just a handful of counties or a handful of municipalities. They need to look at them all to realize how tax changes are going to affect them. And to piggyback on that, so the GRT rate, the state has a portion of the rate. They have the largest portion, and they have been reducing that in recent years. There were some concerns that local governments would turn around and immediately increase their taxes to make up for that difference. And so last year we saw a bill that would put a moratorium on local government GRT increases. And essentially what it does is it ties the hands of local governments to plan and prepare for capital projects, other types of services. And so we came out in force to oppose that moratorium. And so what we did this year, because we've heard rumors it may come back, is we're looking at how local governments use their GRT. And if I go back to 2018, I think only five counties have adjusted their GRT in that time. They've done it very conservatively. Two of them have gone back and since gone back down and repealed it, because local governments traditionally look at using their GRT only as they need to. And I don't think there's any basis for this perception that they are going to rush the backfill, not to mention they're limited in the amounts they can impose anyways.
Yeah.
So we will continue to have a very strong opinion about any of the decisions that the state makes that affects the local government ability to provide the services they need to their constituents.
Yes.
Well, you know, here in Silver City is kind of unique. We had to adjust our municipal component of GRT in order to pay off a liability from a tragedy involving our local police department. This, of course, dovetails into the situation we've been hearing for a couple of years about all the problems with reinsurance for all kinds of law enforcement and municipal entities and other governmental entities. Is there anything that the legislature is looking at in this term dealing with that particular issue about the availability of insurance for liabilities?
You know, it's interesting. There are about three or four bills that are looking at repealing the Civil Rights Act or allowing certain exceptions, like for volunteer firefighters or volunteer EMS with regards to the liability for the Civil Rights Act. Just to share our perspective, you know, we fought very strongly against that because of the concerns to our insurance and the implications it would have. And at this point, the actual grounds where this is being worked through have moved from the legislature to the judicial system for us. And so we are not weighing in heavily on these civil rights proposals. We don't think that a complete repeal is likely to pass. We think that there will need to be adjustments moving forward. We certainly have some recommendations for the sponsors, but this is not something we're tackling right now in the legislature. It's something that has changed the venue. Now, that being said, tying into the tax moratorium that we were talking about, and you mentioned the liability in your community, there may be liabilities that will require the local government to have to institute taxes to pay for litigation.
Yeah.
And if that moratorium is in place, it would essentially prohibit you from being able to do that. And then the other option might be that you're going to have to sell local government-owned property to make the funding that's needed to settle the lawsuit. And that, for us, is really disconcerting.
Interesting. Well, Joy, you know what? I know we're going to be hitting a quarter of the hour before 10. Is there anything else you would like to say to the listeners out there, the saboritos? You know what? I'm telling you, you have you're a very busy person. I know that I try to get a hold of you here and there, and you do return my calls and everything. And I just say, what can you say out there about making sure that try to get a hold of your legislatures, or, you know, get into any whatever committee meetings if any concerns. We got to be aware of what's going on. So would you like to say a few words, if you would, please?
Certainly. Just for perspective, as of today, we have 588 bills that have been introduced, and the legislature can continue to introduce legislation up until February 16th. So that gives a lot more time for things to be moving. And a lot of what we do, I initially used to say that we play defense, but what I would say is we educate. Our goal and our objective at local government is to educate the legislators on how the decisions that they make affect us, whether it's changing processes, whether it's meeting new requirements, whether it's providing a new service, and to give them information about what that tangibly, fiscally means for the resources that the local government has, whether that's staffing, whether that's new software. So we are tracking currently about 113 bills just for our organization that impact counties. And we absolutely encourage our local governments to be communicating regularly with their legislators if they see there's a bill that's of interest to them or that might have potential implications. And we encourage them to reach out to us. We have a lobbyist meeting every morning, and we have several county managers that join us. And we talk about exactly that, how bills that are being introduced will impact local governments. And it's not always defense. There are some really great bills that we absolutely support and are encouraging for that collaboration between state and local governments.
Well, thank you very much, Joy. I'm telling you, I know you got a lot going on. Talking to Harry this morning, like I said, we started pretty much together on board of directors in the year 2000. And it's nice to hear him. And whenever I come up here to see all the faces that were young, not just joking there, Joy. And, you know, after all these years, we look at each other and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're still doing this. But you know what? The experience that these individuals have, and not only that, the time that we spend together and we really help each other. And it doesn't matter if you're a clerk or a treasurer or assessor or county commission, probate judge. We do share a lot of information. And one question that I would like to ask also before you leave. So let's say if an affiliate, that's not on the priority list and everything, and they want to talk about a bill, how do you handle that on those bills if they, you know, need any help from the association?
Great question, Raul. So the affiliates are essentially subcommittees of New Mexico counties as a whole. So that's part of why we require that they go through the board of directors to get endorsement on positions they would like to take on legislation. It is not something that we want to where we have competing interests going in to a bill. But the reality is not all counties are the same. So we are going to have bills where certain counties are supporting and certain counties are opposing. And in those instances, the individuals who are representing that position have to represent it on behalf of their county. They cannot represent it on behalf of NMC or the NMC affiliate. And that's part of why our executive committee meets regularly throughout the session, is so that as things are evolving, we can quickly take positions on initiatives that we need to. So there's a pretty strong dividing line between what county members are saying on behalf of their county versus what county members are saying on behalf of NMC. We are a nonpartisan organization, and our whole goal is for the betterment of the entire state and the majority of the county perspectives.
Thank you, Joey. And good to know. You know, there's quite a few bills that we're chasing for the assessors, and also I pretty much keep track on a lot of bills, like for the city, the county, and stuff like that. But like I said, whatever, you know, we can get any information from you guys, we really appreciate for you being there. And I do want to thank your staff for everything they do, because they did a heck of a job at this last conference. And to put something together where you have 600, 700, 800 people involved, you know, it takes a wonderful village, and you guys have done a phenomenal job there, Joy.
Thank you, Raul. I think one of the things we're all most proud of is the work that we do and the team that we have to do it. We've got an incredible staff with a wealth of knowledge. And kind of just stepping back real quick, when you mentioned the affiliate and all the things the assessors are tracking, we rely so heavily on our affiliates for that technical expertise, and also our staff. Many of us have been doing this for years and years, and we know past points of reference. We know how something will impact something else. We look at things very strategically. And so just kudos to both the affiliate technical expertise as well as our staff's expertise.
Well, thank you, Joey. We really appreciate you coming on. And during the session, we'll probably get back with you and give us another update on what's going on, or get properly Catherine Corciana to come on also, because she actually took the place of Brian Moore. So we'll stay in touch. Okay, there's Joy.
Raul. That sounds wonderful, Raul. Thank you, gentlemen, for all that you do supporting your community. I'm always happy to be a guest.
Hey, Joy. Joy.
Do you have something to ask?
Joy, it's important for you to understand that we had a long-standing invitation to Brian Moore to come down here, and we'd buy him dinner. And since he's gone off to, I have absolutely no reason, no idea why he went to Florida, but but New Mexico is a wonderful place.
And Steve Kopelman there, George. We still got Steve Kopelman right there.
Yeah, well,
you get a hold of him once in a while, don't you?
Well, I do see and speak with Steve regularly. Maybe Steve and I together will have to take a trip down, and we'll take you all out to lunch or dinner.
Oh, no. It's on us, and we certainly hope you make it. And, you know, Grace Phillips is always welcome, and a lot of other people. So, you know, I hope you can come down here.
Absolutely. It will be at some point after March 18th when the legislative session ends.
Oh, really? Huh. What a surprise.
Come on, Ken. Well, all right. Well, thanks a lot, Joey. And I know you got a lot of work to do. I know you're headed to Groundhog Day at the Roundhouse. Just joking. But I know you're going to have a good time today, and it seems like you're always in, you know, pretty much busy and in committee and so on. So we'll get a hold of you down the road, okay?
Sounds great. Thank you both. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Joy. Well, you know what, Ken and George, I know we do have a little few minutes to talk about our calendar, but George, I don't know, man, coming from the Roundhouse, Groundhog Day, worked out this morning, got a little bit of a drive coming down to Silver City, and then I have to entertain you guys. How am I going to do that there, George? And
we know that you're up for it, you know.
Yes. You still there?
No, I think
Don't get excited, okay, George? Ken, come on.
Okay. All right. So you'll be here tomorrow morning, though, right? Yeah, because I know you were talking about being late for that thing, so you don't get put on the spot trying to be funny or dressing nice.
I think that's the last thing that I want to do there, George, is try to be funny, okay?
Yeah, well, that's probably a good idea.
All right, but tonight,
since you have to tell people not to that you're joking, you know, like I said before, you know, that's a sign of a person who should not follow comedy very far. I mean, you've got to tell people that you're joking.
So thanks a lot, Ken. Well, tonight we have Josh Elderman and also Austin Silver coming in at the Silco Theater at 7 o'clock, and I haven't checked because if there's any tickets available, but just being here in Santa Fe, I've talked to a handful of people that they're definitely going to go to that because the opening show is going to be quite interesting. And no pressure, George, no pressure, Ken. So that's happening today at 7 o'clock at the Silco Theater. Anything else going on, Ken?
Well, there's several things going on tonight. Romeo and Juliet, the Virus Theater, will present that, and that'll be at the El Sol Theater at 406 North Bullard, and that starts at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And also, film screening and book release on Friday, that's tomorrow, usually after Thursday it is anyway, film screening and book release at the Power and Light Press, and it'll be a film by the French visual artist Celia Hay, and a release party for the book, Outskirts, you know, as opposed to Inskirts. And the Oasis Open Mic is going to be on Sunday, and it's going to be, that always goes on from 3 to 6 p.m. On Monday, we have improv workouts, Monday night improv physicality and stop moving my finger around here, at the Oasis Coffee and Tea House at 714 North Burler Street. And let's see, I'm trying to get stuff that's going on. Oh, Ariana Camarena will be the speaker and talk about the DWI project in Grant County, and that will be for the Rotary meeting on this February 7th, Tuesday, at 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. So that should be very interesting as well. And let me look at this other one here. They don't cover everything. I will tell you that we are not having the farmers market this weekend. It will be next weekend until March. And so it will be the next weekend after this Saturday. That will be the 11th. And then it will be the next one will be on whenever it is. There it is. The next one will be on the 25th. And then they'll be weekly in March, just so you know. And the museum is open at historic Fort Bayard. In case anybody wants to go out there at 10 a.m. And so that's at Fort Bayard National Historic Landmark.
And now, speaking of Fort Bayard, you know, they're doing their film series. And tonight at 6 o'clock, they're going to be showing The Lone Ranger Begins.
Oh, yeah, right.
And tomorrow, future engineers are invited to go build the future with Legos at the Silver City Public Libraries. And that starts at 3:30.
Uh-huh.
And
I'm talking about engineers. I saw Carrie Ann Fagali up here. She's out here doing a little bit of talking about the bioreactors, and I'm so glad she showed up for the reception. She was at the Roundhouse. I mean, it is impossible to get parking at the Roundhouse, and I had the honor to spend a little bit of time, you know, talking to her. So let me tell you, George, love Grand County, happy to be in Silver City, Santa Clara, the mining district, whatever you want to say, but I'm so happy to be part of Grand County, and I'm so glad that we're here representing our community, our county, and I hope we can just still continue to do, you know, the things that we're doing, and hopefully that we can bring some funding to really help out our county more than anything else, George and Ken.
Well, it's a great thing that you're up there, and I'm glad that you put in the effort, and we wish you safe travels getting back here.
Well, appreciate that. And like I said, let's see how it goes tonight at 7 o'clock. I'm kind of excited about it. And once again, tomorrow, we have Gretchen Olberg from the Main Street. She's going to come on the show at 9 o'clock with Gretchen Lopez to talk about Chocolate Fantasia. And Gretchen, matter of fact, she's up here. We spent a little bit of time together. And I know for a fact that she's going to be going to the comedy show tonight. So I'm telling you, things are moving. Spent some time with our newspaper person, Nick Seibel. He was very pleasant yesterday and had a lot of fun. And talking about a well-dressed man, he had a bow tie on. Man, he was dressed to kill. What's going on? Is everybody trying to outdress me? Is that what's going on, Ken, George?
Well, it's not much of an effort, Raul, really.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks a lot, George. You know what, George? You know what? We're going to talk once we get back, when I get back down there, okay?
Okay.
once again, we're here at live here in Santa Fe talking about legislative issues with our executive director for the New Mexico County, Joyce Esparson. And I'm telling you, it's been a very interesting ride up here. So we'll keep you informed on what's going on with all these bills and what's going on to really benefit Grand County. So please, this is KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, New Mexico. Enjoy the beautiful day. Ken and George, I'll see you mañana temprano. And love you, PJ.
Thanks a lot, Raul.
You've been listening to Local Flavor with your host, Raul Turrieta. It's comfort food for inquiring minds on a bed of music, weather, events, and just plain goings-on in southwest New Mexico. It's served up farmhouse fresh and piping hot every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. with Paula Geisler and Thursdays with Raul Turrieta. So visit often and come hungry for Local Flavor. This is GMCR and KURU, and this is what community radio looks like.
Hey.